You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you really want inside can only come from you. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. Hope you're going to have a good weekend. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it ain't, and it has to be done, it must be done, and you are the one to do it, I know you'll get it done. That's why we appreciate you. But if it don't have to, stay indoors. And if you do go out, put a mask on and make sure you wash your hands. All right. Yeah. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com at the very top of the page are links, and one of them is podcast. Click on that, and then you'll see a drop down, African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, all times are going to give are Eastern times. So adjust accordingly, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad, followed by Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Tuesdays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right. It's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. On Saturdays, Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition from 4 to 6. Black Reality Think, that's tomorrow. Weekend Edition from 4 to 6. And on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And every Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. You get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. Go on their website. Check out the products. Check out. They used to have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. They no longer have a kiosk, but they are selling the products here in Atlanta at Wadada's, and I'll mention that in a minute. WeBuyBlack.com. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tahima has been taking our people to Africa and various spots of Africa for many years, literally hundreds. It is proven. Go to his website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Everything on there is what you need. All the information, all of the paperwork, all of the stuff that you need for a trip of a lifetime. His next upcoming trip will be South Africa, November 20th through the 30th. $3,700, South Africa, November 20th through the 30th. Then in December, Ghana, December 24th to January 5th, 2021, also $3,700. You can pay using an easy interest free payment plan, drop $400 down on deposit, continue to pay, and by November, it should be paid, and then there you go. Or December trip to Ghana. Africa for the Africans. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Or give good brother Bomani Tayemba a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Renoko Rashidi. Renoko, go to his website, drrenoko.com. He has a trip to Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th. October 5th through the 16th, Uganda and Rwanda. Then he has a trip upcoming right after that, when he just gets back for a few days, October 22nd through November 4th, to Kemet, to Egypt, October 22nd. Both of those trips are around $4,200. Habashah, Incorporated.org. Go to HabashahIncorporated.org and look at what the brothers and sisters are doing. They are doing the work. They're doing the work locally with Habashah Works and Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, and Urban Green Jobs. And the Golden Growers, Habashah, they deserve our support. They're developing the Kashi Project in Ghana. The buildings, the walls are up, the land. Oh, man, I'm telling you, they're doing the work. Go online to Habashah, H-A-B-E-S-H-A, incorporated.org. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Habashah. The Medu Bookstore is open in the Greenbrier Mall. Go to the Medu Bookstore, Mama Nia, and help support her. When I saw her the other day, she says it's been very slow. Man, I tell you. But the mall is open, and there's a number of stores that are not open in the Greenbrier Mall, but there are some that are. She closes at 7 p.m. She doesn't stay open until 9. She closes around 7 in the Greenbrier Mall. But please give her a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. That's the Medu Bookstore, the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore I promote, of course, is Brother Gazimde Ajamu, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The number to call, make sure that he has the books that you're looking for, is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right across the street, right down the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, right across the street from Soul Veg and the West End Mall. That's right. 878 Ralph David Abernathy in the West End. Their number to call is 404-444-1663. 404-444-1663. That is Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. They also have We Buy Black. They have We Buy Black in Wadada's. They have the laundry detergent and all the other, many other projects, and a assortment of health food and herbs and so forth. So check out Wadada's in the West End. Okay. Also, too, they have Afroletics there. There's other brothers and sisters that have a table there that are selling jewelry and other items, and Brother Afroletics, which is the brother that created the athletic wear with the Afrocentric names of like the Omex, the Moors, the Dogon Star Seed, the Heroes, the Rebels, the Zulus. So check it out. Go
online, go to www.afr-letich.com. Afroletics. Akabin Institute. Let me see, what did I do with that? Oh, here it is. Akabin Institute. Brothers and sisters, Brother Baba Baruti and Sister Yabaruti deserve our support. They are teaching our young warriors. Of course, they accept no donations outside of our community, so we're asking you to please support Akabin Institute. Make your check money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use PayPal or Cash App, go to the use the dollar sign, YAA, the letter M, then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your cash payments ongoing. Also, too, brothers and sisters, the Common Sense Security for our sisters is next week Saturday. Next week Saturday. The Common Sense for our sisters is next week Saturday. And it is from 12 noon to 2 p.m. It is online. Donation is $10 for the sister, $5 for younger sisters. You can contact Sister Baruti, Yah, or Mwalimu Baruti at yahoo.com, or give them a call at 404-753-7237. That's 404-753-7237. And, of course, what you do is... To register, you have to register because this is online. Make your $10 donations or $5 for sisters, younger sisters, teens, to PayPal account, yabaruti at gmail, YAABARUTI at gmail.com. Make sure you include your pertinent information. You know, this is the Common Sense Security for sisters only. Your name, your email address, because the link will be sent to you, and your phone number. That's next Saturday. Common Sense Security for our sisters. Bibi Fahodie. Sister Gabrielle Rill with the Sanjay-Aidi. That's sanjay-aidi.org. sanjay-aidi.org. She's doing the work in the northeastern portion, the rural area of Haiti. And you should see those, how beautiful those children are. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics. They had a Thursday night broadcast last night on Blog Talk Radio. blogtalkradio.com/Us Lifting Us, or ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. If you want to call in just to listen, you can do that. Or call in to make comments or concerns. You can dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Also on Fridays, I announce my good brother and friend, Brother Yusuf Muhammad's program, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, also on Blog Talk Radio. The number to call for Blog Talk for Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, which is every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, is 563-799-3089. That's 563-799-3089. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. All right, brothers and sisters. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. June 4th. There is in this world no such force as the force of a man determined to rise. I repeat, there is in this world no such force as the force of a man determined to rise. William Edward Burkhart Du Bois, W.E.B. Du Bois. We once existed in a state of ma'at, in sync with the universe and each other. Our decline has been identified with the invading presence of others, skilled in disorder and devoid of civilization, but welcomed by our xenophilic hearts and our gradual, forced, mistaken submission to their ubiquitous spiritual ways. Physical, mental, and spiritual and cultural devastation followed in rapid succession. For over 3,000 years, fragmentation, poverty, and powerlessness ruined and rained down upon our people, giving us ample cause to lose memory. Even so, there were still those among us who refused to accept others' lies about our natural state. There are those among us moving from generation to generation who refuse to be de-Africanized. We uncover and relearn what was more than deep skin, as well as what secrets our skin held. From this milestone, we began to claim what was inherently ours. Returning to our source, we studied, reconceptualized, and built institutions modeled in the spirit of our ancestors. Our intergenerational rebirth into who we have always been galvanizes us to save ourselves from a corrupted, self-hating menticide. The best of us have realized that culture is the key. I'll repeat. The best of us have realized that culture is the key to sustaining the momentum of this awakening until we have reached and gone beyond the point where we can say and we can see no way other than that of our ancestors. Ashe. Affirm, I am the best of us. Affirm, I am the best of us. June 5th. We have a right to self-determination. It is a birthright which we need not either justify nor explain. Tom Mboya. Self-confidence comes about in the expanded thought and demands of initiative. What this means is that those individuals who have self-confidence or want to claim it, and those who are willing to take the first step to do something, first has an initial, as well as in before others. Warriors working to develop their confidence select individuals who have mastered what they have not to challenge them. What they have not to challenge them. They pick someone they can learn from. Why would we wish to deny our children their birthright to experience a real reality, a challenging one, a self-discovering one? Why would we force a weakening synthetic one on them that drives them to find the easiest way to every end just because we can't take any pain? Why do we refuse to make our children powerful in the only way people have ever done so, through struggle? We must have the confidence to imagine a legion of tempered descendants who would know they can handle anything that confronts them. Now that's power. Those who follow us would have found their infinite potential by having successfully passed the increasingly more difficult tests that we carefully and compassionately placed before them. They would intuitively know that Kant died long before the ancients were born. They would know that they are African. Just as no one is born wise, no one is born with self-confidence. It has to be developed. It has to be nurtured. It takes time. I say. Affirm, I am self-confident as I pursue African liberations. I am self-confident. Affirm, I am self-confident as I pursue African liberation. June 6th, eunuchs, figuratively or actual, do not lead captive revolts. I repeat, eunuchs, figurative or actual, do not lead captive revolts. Eunuchs do not refuse to fight in unholy wars, thumbing their nose at trophies and fame to achieve which some men sell their souls. Jean Carey Bond, Patricia Peary. Revolutionaries are not reactive passives who do nothing or who do another's bidding as apolitical mercenaries for money, praise, and pleasure. I repeat, revolutionaries are not reactive passives who do nothing in another's bidding as apolitical mercenaries or for money or praise or pleasure. They expand their energy into the difficult and usually intimate and immediately thankless work of solidly reconnecting us to the knowledge and wisdom of our ancestors, practicing our traditions without unneeded modifications, and building strong, empowered, enduring families, educational, economic, political, spiritual, and military institutions that reaffirm the African way in a manner that it can no longer be assaulted by internal or external enemy forces. We are not the eunuchs others would portray us in an effort to demoralize and defeat us. We are verbally assaulted only because, even in the presence of all their destructions, we have not been defeated. If we were eunuchs, powerless individuals, wallowing in our own submission, no one would have to say so in order to convince us. As with their science, persistently reoccurring attempt to convince us of some fallacious genetic intellectual inferiority of African people, it would be self-evident. It would not have to be stated over and over again at every opportunity. It would be understood as normal because it would be apparent as the and appeared as the norm. And we know that is never and will never be the case. Affirm, I will never be defeated. Affirm, I will never be defeated. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, I'm full of emotions today, and I'm going to talk about a dear friend of mine who made his transition, an icon in our movement, and a brother who has been in that struggle a long time. So we're going to talk about Dr. Conrad Worrell and his contribution to our struggle. I'm going to have a program at a later date that really pays a tribute to him. I just put the title today, just Remembering Conrad. We're going to read from the Chicago Crusader, its last one that basically focuses on Conrad today. We're going to read from that. And, a lot of other things we're going to do about Conrad. But first, yesterday, as I was out and about, you know, when I'm in the car, I get a chance to listen to NPR or other talk shows. Not too much music. Every now and then I play some music, some jazz or some contemporary old school, you know, like the old school. But usually I listen to a lot of talk radio and NPR. I don't listen to the AM talk that much anymore. I don't know why, but you know, it's Al Sharpton in the afternoon. It's brother early in the morning. Rashad Richie. And then some sister comes on. I miss my brother. Yeah. F. Keith Slaughter. I don't know why they took him off the air and I tried to call him to no avail. But anyway. So I was listening to NPR and a feature came on with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Now, I am a avid Laker fan. The teams, the sports teams of my youth, they're still my teams, whether they're good or they're bad. I'm not a fair weather fan. Once you're my team and I've fallen in love with you as my team, you're my team. And all of my teams are from my youth. So obviously I didn't know any better. I should drop them. I should know better and drop them, especially the Jets. And but my first team was the Lakers, the early 60s. I was an L.A. Laker fan, loved Elgin Baylor. He's still my idol. He's still my favorite player of all time. And, of course, I suffered through many, many years as a Laker fan losing to the Boston Celtics. God, I suffered. And, then the Lakers got Kareem from Milwaukee, you know. Didn't do nothing right away. But boy, when they got Magic Johnson in 1980, huh? Yeah, when they picked up Magic Johnson in the draft, coming off of a national championship with Michigan State in '79, man, he followed that up with an NBA championship in 1980 against Philadelphia, against the Doctors. Man, and all the five championships that Kareem, he has six championships along with Michael Jordan, he has six. Bill Russell has 11. Robert Orr, Big Shot, I hate when they say Big Shot Bob. They wouldn't have, never known no damn Bob Ory. It was Robert Ory. He was Big Shot Rob. Big Shot Rob has seven championships because he played a six-player role on Houston. The one, two they won. Three with the Lakers. San Antonio. Is there somebody else? I know he has seven. But anyway, Kareem was on. And, of course, Kareem has been on TV a lot because of his activism. And I thought when he talked the other day about a national television about the disturbances, you know, and saying why you worried about the looting and so forth when people, this is a culmination of decades, literally decades of frustration. Not so much at the turn of the century. Obviously, we couldn't demonstrate because we'd have been masked. Killed because we're mass killed, regardless if we demonstrated or not. Because the Caucasians at various times, you know, the other day, June 1st was the anniversary of the destruction of Black Wall Street and the mass murder of Black Wall Street. Next year would be 100 years, 1921, 2021. And I plan to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma. To see how they commemorate that date and whatever is happening. I was in Tulsa right before they locked everybody down. Fortunately, I made that trip with some other brothers and sisters in our organization of the American African Firefighters Association, the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. Because the brother who's the state senator out of Tulsa, Oklahoma State Senator, wants us to push and promote the idea of people coming to Tulsa. And I will, and I definitely will, to mark that commemoration. You know, because here you had a thriving community. But Tulsa wasn't the only. There were many others. There was Rosewood, many others. Elaine Arkansas. You know, and so we could not do what we did in the 60s. And most of the stuff in the 60s were in the North. But there were other disturbances, particularly in the 1919, 1918, the red hot summers. And basically what that was, once again, is Caucasians. It's not us. We didn't go disturbing anything. No, it was just them. If we wanted to make a move for jobs and so forth, it's them. It's Caucasians. That's why, to me, we must understand there ain't a damn thing that we can do that can persuade these folks to act any better. And I mean that now. And so Kareem on the program talking about his activism and so forth and his youth, he was in a program in New York. You know, he's from New York. Went to Power Memorial. I mean, he was a consistent winner. He was just like Bill Russell. Bill Russell won in high school, won in college, won in the Olympics. Kareem didn't go to the Olympics. He boycotted the Olympics in 68. You know? Spencer Haywood, if you can remember. You know, So Kareem is talking about his upbringing, and he was in a program, and he couldn't remember the person's name who was in the, who helped with the program that he was in, that he had opportunity to ask Dr. King a question when Dr. King was in New York. It came to him, and he said, oh, it's Clark, John Henry Clark. He couldn't remember Dr. John Henry Clark? Let me say this to you. I remember when Kareem challenged Afrocentricity and the African-centered scholars. And when Kareem challenged the African-centered scholars, I was upset. Because he'd rather believe in a Henry Louis Gates or John Hope Franklin, those scholars. He'd rather believe those scholars. And believe me, I think that Henry Louis Gates and John Hope Franklin, they're good men. But they did not write from our perspective. And so Kareem was giving a perspective that is not ours. It's suffice to say that I'm so upset that, I'm going to always, from this moment on, look at Kareem very differently. Very differently. He's still a Laker. He's still that. He's still, to me, the GOAT, the greatest player of all time. He still is that. But, I mean, it's just like all the other players, football players and basketball players, these athletes tonight. You know, African-centered, very few. When I see tattoos on some of these guys' arms, I look at what do the tattoos look like, you know. When I see, like, on Rasheed Wallace, he had Akhenaten and Nefertiti and the sun and so forth. One brother had an Ankh. So when I see those, I have an understanding. These brothers have a level of consciousness. Kareem, unfortunately, does not. When you can't remember the great Dr. John Henry Clark, the impact that he has made, and the fact that he took you to that program, you remember the program, you remember being there talking, having the opportunity to ask Martin Luther King a question, but you can't remember who was the head of the program. And the fact that you have challenged African-centered philosophy and thought and practices, you've challenged it. I kind of forgot to a degree, but obviously when that situation happened yesterday on NPR, everything was just brought back, even after you married a Caucasian woman. I still love the Lakers. You know, from a basketball standpoint, like Michael and Kobe, Wilt, all of them, I hated them off the court. Still do. Even Kobe. No, Kobe wasn't strong. He challenged when Michael and them said, we can't breathe, or what was it, hands up, don't shoot, or whatever it was. Whatever protest that they were doing, Kobe said some whack stuff. He later came around, and that's cool. You know, that's cool. But to me, I look at what you have done. Yeah. So I'm gonna take a call here. I know this call gonna be interesting. 646. Good morning.
And saying, okay, y'all got me.
646.
This goes back to Claude McKay again, Red Summer.
Okay. 646.
Hey, yo, Oshie.
Hey, what's up, Jay?
Not much, man. Could you turn up the volume on your TuneIn app, if possible, because it's real low?
Okay, well, I would suggest that I'm not going to really mess with these because they're at the height that I can take them without distortion. They really are.
Okay.
Yeah, because if I turn it up a little more, they would be distorted. I'll make sure that I speak a little louder too, because sometimes.
Maybe you need to put your mouth
directly on the microphone, huh?
On the mic, bro.
Okay, Jay.
Get you a screen or something. Yeah. As far as Kareem, I don't know if Kareem married a white woman, man. I think she was Latino, Puerto Rican.
Is that what it is? Something like that.
I don't think
she's Portuguese. Let me say this. If she's Portuguese, Spain, if that her ass is in Europe, whatever you're in the southern part of Europe or the northern part of Europe, central Europe, if you're in Europe, you Caucasian, you white. And I bet you any money they would classify themselves as such, because even the folks in northern Africa classify themselves as white. In the east, so in the so-called Middle East, they classify themselves as white. So I don't know. You know, I know that
well, you know, I've always found Kareem, to be honest with you, to be more or less an intellectual Negro than anything else.
I agree with you. Yes.
He's a very astute, well-read, well-educated brother who's been exposed to a lot of things that most haven't been, and he's dealt with the media in a manner in which has really been harmful to him in a lot of ways. And he's basically became, in a broader sense, like that Negro Hakeem Olabudi.
Yeah.
They're conformed to the system of white supremacy to get along and enjoy their old age. That's all it is, brother. Yeah. I mean, you know, the reality is, Oshi, when you get older, your warriorship for most doesn't increase, if the truth be told. You just become in a relaxed state if you're really not a warrior.
Well, I understand it, and that's true, because like, just like for me, my mindset is there, but I can't go out there and fight. Just like what's going on in the streets. I'm not going to go out in the street.
It's your actions. It's the way you think. It's the way you respond. Perfect example. How could Hakeem Olabudi ever say that he doesn't see the Yorugu as the perpetual enemy?
Right.
If you write it, and then years later you say that I don't believe it anymore,
Well, the thing is, the thing is, sometimes there's sponsorship, there's monies that are out there, and so publicly, I can't say this. I know I can't. I might have said this years ago, but now, because of the monies that are out there, there might be tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars.
If you're not a warrior, you're a coward, you're a sellout. And you have no value to African people.
Yeah.
That's like Baba Maroodi changing his position on the Yorugu 10 years from now when he's a little older. Get out of here.
Well, we know that ain't happening, but you're right.
Accepting people like that.
Yeah.
As long as we continue to accept that type of behavior, we're going to still be getting the foot down behind like we are right now and just enjoying the moment, trying to call it a movement.
Yeah.
But basically, it ain't nothing but a fratricidal moment that we just glorified and enjoying till it'll be over in another week.
That's right, and it'll be back.
It'll be back to usual.
Exactly, Brother Jay. Thanks a lot, man. Just hang
on. Have a good time, bro. Put me on up you.
All right, brother. Thank you. Yeah. Conrad World. When I first seen Conrad World, he had a column in the Final Call, and he had a column in the Milwaukee Community Journal, and that I read. So I had not met him. I didn't know him. But, of course, being African-centered, you gravitate to those who are African-centered. And you read their writings, and you recognize that this person is speaking or writing in the framework that I can embrace, that I have a good feeling about, you know, and that it helps me, it informs me, it nurtures me, it helps me grow mentally, fortifies me. I don't know what else I can say. But that was Conrad. And I read his columns. Some of them I kept, and of course I kept all the ones now electronically from the Chicago Crusader. You've heard me read them periodically on this program for now years. Had him on the program twice when Frances made her transition. It was interesting because Frances Cress Welsing was out of Chicago. And even though Conrad was born in Pasadena, they moved to Chicago. And one of France's sisters, older sisters, babysat for Conrad and him. That's what he told me, you know. Yeah, that's how he knows the Kress sisters, Dr. Kress and his wife, the Kress sisters, you know. And great stories. I'm going to play something in the second hour of him talking about the Carruthers Centers for Inner City, the Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies on the south side of Chicago. And they have a street. There was a street named right outside of the Carruthers Center. It used to be called Northeastern Illinois University for Inner City Studies. Northeastern Illinois. Right there in Chicago. Right there on the south side of Chicago. And in fact, Father Clemens' church is right down the street from there. Father Clemens, and he passed. He made his transition a little while ago. Here's the article in the Chicago Crusader dated today. Dr. Conrad Wurl's World. The African community has had many individuals who have spent a great deal of their lives in service to group progress. Sometimes these individuals are lauded after their demise, while others get a chance to smell their roses while they are here. The Crusader is happy to say that Conrad Wurl, whose column has appeared in the Crusader for more than 25 years up to this current time, is one of the people who deserves our current accolades. Dr. Conrad was no stranger to anyone who has been interested in activism. He is a writer, educator, activist, and former talk show host for WVON call-in program On Target. He was also a special consultant on field operations in the Million Man March, which took place October 16, 1995, and was a key operative with the National Black United Front, NBUF. His activism has centered on the need for greater independence in the African centered life. Excuse me. His activism has centered on the need for greater independence in American African life and helping young people better understand the relationship between power and institutions. Brother Conrad always talking about power, black power, black power. Always talking about power. Dr. Conrad was born in Pasadena, California, and moved to Chicago at the age of 9. Apparently, activism was in his genes, as his father was in the NAACP. His father was also involved in the Young Men Christian Association, the YMCA, and that's why he moved from Pasadena, which his family knew the Robinsons. That's right, Jackie Robinson. And his father was a good friend with Jackie Robinson's older brother. They lived in that area. His father was also involved in the YMCA. Dr. Conrad's credits his father has a large influence in his embracing of a life of activism. Dr. Conrad is married and is the father of several daughters. In addition to activism, Dr. Conrad was an athlete who pursued basketball, football, and track. He also served in the Army in Okinawa, Japan. Overseas, he self-educated. While he was overseas, he self-educated in African history, politics, and culture. And when he returned, he attended George Williams College, majoring in applied behavioral sciences. Subsequent to that experience, he eventually received his PhD at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where his focus was curriculum and instruction in secondary social studies. Upon receiving his degree, he taught at George Williams College and at the Northeastern Illinois University for Inner City Studies, where he served as a longtime professor and administrator in Inner City Studies until his retirement. Later was named Dr. Jacob Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies. Dr. Conrad's activism has borne much fruit. He has been a tireless warrior in advancing the progress of Africans in the diaspora. In addition to his teachings, he was also elected as Economic Development Commissioner of the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America, NBUF, and has said previously his widely lauded column, World's World, has appeared weekly in the Chicago Crusader. as if it's not enough or isn't enough, Dr. Conrad Wuerl has a new legacy that Chicagoans can really enjoy. For 35 years, he has been advocating to bring indoor track facility to Chicago. His dream has been realized. The facility broke ground in August of last year and is located at Gately Park. It will give the Chicago Public School System student athletes access to an indoor track. The $55 million Gately Indoor Track and Field is the state-of-the-art 139,000 square feet track facility that includes the area's first hydraulically banked 200 meter track, an 8-lane track, a throwing cage for discus or shot put. It also provides accommodations for football, lacrosse, volleyball, outdoor soccer games, basketball, and so much more. Dr. Wuerl has been lobbying for a track facility in Chicago since the former mayor of Chicago, Harold Washington's administration. Washington was on board, but he unfortunately transitioned before it could become a reality. This project is the icing on the cake of years of an accomplished life of service, and Chicago youth will be able to benefit from it for many years to come. The Crusader is proud to be associated with a scholar, athlete, activism, with such great vision. He deserves every honor that he has come his way and those that he may receive posthumously. We believe that every conscious African should give kudos to those who have worked hard to make a better quality of life available for our community. And Dr. Conrad Wuerl certainly qualifies as such a person. Most of all, the facility, that new facility in Gately Park, should be named in his honor, the Dr. Conrad Wuerl Indoor Track and Field Facility. Rest in peace, great warrior. You will truly be missed. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you for all that you have done. Brother Conrad Wuerl, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, if you want to get in on this conversation, you can hit star twice. That'll let you in. Or you can hang up and call back. Okay? You can do one or the other. We're listening. You're listening to African Perspective. In fact, the piece I'm going to play is Power, because it was the Earth, Wind, and Fire coming out of Chicago. And, of course, Conrad always talked about power. So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives. You stay right with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here once again every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Monday evenings, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming from 6 to 8, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Fridays, On Fridays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 o'clock tonight. And then on Saturdays, Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition with Brother Dr. William Rogers from 4 to 6. And then on Sunday, Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday evening. And then every Monday through Friday in the evening from 10 p.m. Eastern Time to 12 a.m. is the Warren Valentine Show. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Conrad Wuerl was a brother that I've grown to really admire, respect, and love. And watching him when I first met him, I think it was in Cobra Conference in Chicago at the Carruthers Center for Inner City Stuff. It wasn't called that then. They were talking about early 90s. I think it was when I met Conrad. It was in the 80s, I don't think. Dr. Carruthers was still living. I heard him talking, came to Milwaukee. Anderson Thompson, all the good brothers that sisters that were involved at that time. And Conrad was a key piece. Conrad World was a key piece in helping all that together. You know, some of the other activities Conrad serves in leadership roles in numerous organizations, of course, the National Black United Front, which is a national organization. Its chairperson now is Brother Kofi Taharka. Conrad has been named Chairman Emeritus of the National Black United Front, like he's Chairman Emeritus of the Carruthers Center's Inner City Studies. He also was a member of the Black United Fund, the Black United Fund of Illinois. He was also active with the National Coalition for Black Reparations in America in Cobra. He was a special consultant to the 1995 Million Man March, helped organize Harold Washington's campaign, and co-founded a task force for American African political empowerment. He traveled to Geneva, Switzerland in 97 with a declaration to formally charge the United States government with genocide and human rights violations before the Commission of Human Rights. He also presented a petition to the United Nations in 2001 and led a 400-member delegation to the UN World Conference Against Racism and Repression in Durban, South Africa, the Durban 400. Conrad was a part of all of those. I'm going to open up the lines, and if you have something you want to say about Conrad or anything else, you can say it. Good afternoon, 404-453.
Hey, Brother Oak here.
Hey, how Wes. Doing, man? I'm doing fine. Wes, how are you?
Hey, I'm still out here trying to make it. Hey, look here, man. Speaking about Kareem, man, I think he's sick. He got some kind of disease. All right, so it's probably mine ain't right, but I've been noticing something. Every doggone Negro that laid up with the white folk, the white devils, they end up with some doggone mysterious disease. I can name you two or three of them. Montel Williams, what the tennis lady name, Serena Williams, Lola Polana. Okay, so you Negroes better watch yourself laying up with them devils, man.
Okay.
Yeah, man, I've been noticing that, man.
Okay, Wes. Okay, dear brother. You got anything else?
Hey.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir, man. I want to commend the young folks in the street, man. But,
okay.
The way to get rid of the police, man, they got the East Municipality needs to cancel the contract with the unions, man, with the FOP.
Mm-hmm.
Just cancel the whole damn contract and start their own police force, man. As simple as that, man. Okay, and all these folks that stealing stuff and looting, they got them on facial recognition on camera, man. So you're going to see a whole bunch of folks get arrested.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, because all they're going to do is get their face. Put it in the database.
Well, let's just hope. Let's just hope they get everybody who they can.
Yeah.
And let's just hope that the majority of my Caucasian, because that's what I've seen. What I've seen looting and throwing bricks and being destructive and spray painting buildings and so forth. Yeah. You know, I was telling a friend, I was like, you know, when back in the 60s, you might have seen some Caucasians that went on the march, on the demonstration, but when it was time to throw bricks and bottles and night and riot, there wasn't no Caucasian. If you was a Caucasian, then you would get your ass whooped. There were no Caucasians in that mix like it is now. They might have been on the demonstration. They might have, you know, we shall overcome. But they weren't out there with us at that time. And you see, there's a plethora of Caucasians consistently, particularly being destructive. And some argue it's the Antifada, that left-wing anarchist group or anti-fascist group. Because I know I'm anti-fascist. I hate the fascism. I hate people like Bolsonaro and Trump. I hate those Caucasians who are arrogant, you know, and who are punitive. So, but yeah.
Yes, sir. But that's what the United States is, a corporation anyway, man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's who runs it, and the globalists. The United States corporation. So I agree with you on that, man. And y'all, we'll see if it's buying for real within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
If a lot of people come down sick, man. I hope not, but it is what it is, man.
I hear you.
And just enjoy the show. Enjoy the show, man. Stay strong, stay black.
Right on, brother. Thanks, Wes. Have a good weekend. 404-734.
Hi, excuse me. I'm just listening.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that very much. And, okay. Well, let me talk more about Conrad. I want to play something, too. This is a piece that Conrad did for the university. The University of Inner City Studies. And it's one hell of a facility. I've been there for many types of things, anywhere from NBUF to ASCAC to NCOBRA. You know, it is a place, as Conrad was going to explain, that many of our people, many artists, musicians, prominent individuals over the many years that place on the South Side has been there, you know. It's right there on 33rd Street or Pershing, right up the street from the White Sox Park, Comiskey Park. I guess it's still named that. I don't know. You know. In fact, I met Barack Obama in Buff. We had an NBUF meeting in Chicago. And Barack, Jesse brought him in to talk to our group. He's running for the U.S. Senate. I believe he was a state senator at the time. He's running for the U.S. Senate, and of course, he won. You know, so we met Barack Obama, and a lot of other things that happened with the inner city studies that have been impactful for our people. And when he had his street named after him, I was there. Yeah, that was some time ago. He had a street named after him. But here is Brother Conrad talking about what is now Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies.
This building became a center for social service delivery, a hotbed for the Chicago Black Arts Movement and many of the great literary giants of the times, like Richard Wright, Lorraine Hansberry, Margaret Burroughs, and even Paul Robeson met here in the Negro Writers Club. So the Abraham Lincoln Center became kind of a hotbed for intellectual discourse of some of the leading writers and artists during that period. And so the building was always known as, in the black communities, a place where people could come to have a meeting. Well, now we move into the 1940s, we move into the 1950s, and this was the full-flown social service agency in the tradition of Jane Addams Settlement House, Hull House, over on the Near West Side. Malcolm X had a debate with a black socialist gentleman at the University of Chicago. That's right up the street. And after the debate was over with, some people in the ex-Nation of Islam and Nation of Islam connected people brought Malcolm by here for a brief encounter in the auditorium and a little discussion about his impending trip to Africa. So in 1966, when Dr. King was invited to come to Chicago and spoke at Liberty Baptist Church up the street after that gathering, some folks invited Dr. King over here for a meeting in the Abraham Lincoln Center. And so you have this history of persons going back to 1915, before the shift in population. The renowned scholar, Dr. W.E. Du Bois, gave a public lecture in the auditorium on the question of race, Du Bois being the first African-American to earn his Ph.D. at Harvard. And so the founder of what we call African-American History Month, Carter G. Woodson, used to walk by this building in 1915 because he was living at the Wabash Y down the street at 3763 South Wabash. In more contemporary time, Harold Washington, the first African-American mayor, was a fixture in this building. As a matter of fact, he spoke in this auditorium so many times you would have thought he was on the faculty. Fred Hampton, who was the chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, was a fixture in this building as a young man. And so it goes on and on and on. We can say that there is tradition. And tradition is very important. So the Abraham Lincoln Center emerged and established a tradition as a community center long before Northeastern Illinois University was ever thought of. And so with the first renovation of the building in the mid-1970s, to restore the building, to upgrade the building, and the current renovation of the auditorium at $1.7 million has helped keeping this tradition alive in terms of the infrastructure of this historic building. So the significance of what we call the Don Bailey Legacy Hall, which is the auditorium, who was named in honor of Don Bailey, who served as the director of the center when it was the Center for Inner City Study, and it transitioned into the Jacob Carruthers Center for Inner City Study. That tradition has an upgraded state-of-the-art space, which is sacred to continue that tradition. Well, I've seen some of the greatest scholars in the African world present lectures in my 38 years here. Some of them are not that well known, but they're icons in their work in the African community around the world. We can name them. The great Chancellor Williams, who wrote a book, The Destruction of Black Civilization. The great scholar, John Henry Clark, who was a professor at Hunter College. John Jackson, who wrote numerous books on the impact of African people in antiquity. The great Asa Hilliard, who was a Fuller Calloway scholar at Georgia State University, who passed away. Barbara Sizemore, who ended up becoming the dean of DePaul University. The great Dr. Bobby Wright, who was the first black to earn his Ph.D. in clinical psychology from the University of Chicago. Dr. Wade Nobles from San Francisco State University. It goes on and on and on and on. Of course, our own Dr. Jacob Carruthers, who was the intellectual guru of sort of the high priest of our academic trajectory, who passed away in 2004, lectured in that auditorium on numerous occasions and gave profound lectures, and one of them was produced into a book called Intellectual Warfare, which is widely read in academic circles. And I've seen Oscar Brown Jr. perform. His daughter, Maggie Brown, has been a fixture here. The great singer today, Dee Alexander in Chicago, has performed here. The great saxophonist, Ari Brown, and the art ensemble, Mawata Bouton, which created the great black music sound. And so these musicians were fixtures here. And in the late 1960s, there was a theater called Oakland Theater over there on Drexel Boulevard. So that music followed the theater over there when the theater shut down and a man by the name of Phil Coran started the Afro Arts Theater. He had a group of very talented musicians who came out of the practicing here at the Abraham Lincoln Center, who ultimately became Earth, Wind, and Fire. It's an institutional icon that has sacred space.
Conrad Wirl, my good brother and friend. And that's, he's talking about the inner city, talking about the Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies. And I hope that the track that Gately Park will be named in his honor. The indoor track and that whole facility be named in his honor, because it was seriously his work, his tireless work to make that happen. 646-646, good afternoon.
Hey, Brother Oshie, man. I'd just like to say that Conrad was a good brother. He was a warrior. I had a little difference with him in regards to reparations on a certain level. But other than that, he was a solid brother, man. And he really worked with the youth in Chicago, man. And he educated a lot of people. And he tried to give a lot of people opportunities to identify with who they was as Africans. I spoke to a couple of brothers recently from Chicago that I know that, you know, just had good things to say about them.
Mm-hmm.
But right quick, I want to address something. You know, your boy Research West just got on and said something in regards to Brother Kareem.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, ain't nothing wrong with Kareem's mind. Kareem
right.
has been through a couple of illnesses.
He has. I didn't know that.
You know, yeah, but you know, Kareem is a beautiful brother. I don't live too far from him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the type of individual that has shown, to be honest with you, what growth is. Because he's always been seen as an outcast in society.
Because of his height?
Because of his height. And because of one important thing, his intellect.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Kareem went through a lot when the brothers and sisters was killed in Washington that were Muslims that lived in his home.
Mm-hmm.
And the media and the manner
I remember in which that well.
They treated him
mm-hmm.
has never been fair. So I think when West makes these assertions about something's wrong with a person, he need to do what he calls himself, a researcher, a little more, because I've listened to some of the crackpot things that he said, and yo, Wes, you ain't on Kareem's level in regards to nothing other than maybe electronics, okay? So stay in your place and show respect to real intellectuals who put down true, honest work from their perspective. And Kareem is one of those people who, if you read his books, you have to give the man his due diligence and his respect. Because regardless, whatever he do, he's always tried to make the life of people who have mistreated him a little bit better. Okay, so he don't have our cultural total position of nationalism, but let me tell you something. He's a lot more African than most Negroes.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Well read.
Yeah.
So I mean, we need to be fair, and when we assess people like Kareem, because I tell you this, I'll fight in the room with Kareem before I would some crackpot research Negro like you, Wes. Have a good day.
Listen, hold on. No, Jay, don't do that, man.
Because he's wrong. He's wrong.
Well, you know this. Let me say this, Jay.
To be despaired,
Jay, Hold on, I've got to mute you. Let me just say and hope you're listening. You know, there's a way to do stuff. And I know that you may not agree with Wes. And actually, I didn't agree with Wes on that, you know. But let's, on this program, I don't want a constant back and forth on this program. We can have some agreements and disagreements. But one of the things that we're always going to do is elevate each other and our positions, because it's not about you and it ain't about me. Our problem is that we don't understand it is about us. And us meaning our African selves, not about us in the context of America, individualism and Negroism, but it is about us in the best sense of our African selves. And so that should say that we don't, yeah, if it's off, we'll say, hey, brother, that's off, you know, and we'll try to come to understand. If we don't, so be it. But that's what we should do. 404-453, Wes, go ahead. Okay, you don't want to say no. You got him. 267, good afternoon.
Hey, Brother Oshie, I'm not going to keep you long. I just wanted to say, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, in my opinion, he never carried himself around like an idiot. He never, you know, mm-hmm. the brother always carried himself like a professional. Yeah, he took up the Nation of Islam. I mean, not the Nation of Islam. He was a Sunni Muslim for a time.
Right.
But we all go through our own processes. Now, one thing I love about that brother, the only thing I see, I didn't even see this wrong with his mind. The only thing I see what the brother did was actually he wanted nothing to do with the media.
Right.
He hated the media, and they called him an angry black man.
Right.
But I'm gonna get off. I'm gonna make it real short, brother.
Okay.
But I disagree with Brother Wes. Brother Wes, come on, man. All right. So I'm gonna hang up.
All right. Thanks a lot, my brother. And you're right. Because has a person living in the world.
Brother Oshie.
No, go ahead.
I love Kareem. I love Kareem, man. I just say the man sick. He got some kind of a bunch of cirrhosis. I love Kareem, man. I don't know.
Hey,
man, I love all black people.
I don't know if he Wes, I don't know if he has a disease or not. If you come up with some research that he has been ill with some kind of disease, I don't think it's because he's been messing with Caucasians. But who knows? Because my contention is Muhammad Ali, when he was going through what he was going through, I believe that when he went to the Mayo Clinic in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm. And they shot him up with something, man.
That's what I believe. Because, let me finish. Because there is not a direct link between boxing and head injury, and what was he supposed to have had? What was Ali supposed to have had?
Parkinson's.
Parkinson's disease. Because if that was the case, a whole bunch of fighters who have been hit and a lot longer and more than Muhammad Ali. I mean, your fighters from back in the day, these cats were fighters. Muhammad Ali was a boxer. These cats are fighters, like Archie Moore. I love the Mongoose. But he fought well into his 40s. He took a lot of punishment. Even that fight that I saw with Muhammad Ali, I saw the only fight that I was scared of at the time when I was a young kid was the fight with Doug Jones. But he won that fight. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he was knocked down by the Caucasian dude, the British dude.
Right.
And he got up and knocked him out. You know.
Well, look here, I'm going to say this, man. I ran into Angelo Dundee in Miami. I was working in the building. He took me to his office, okay? And he showed me a picture of Ali and Sugar Ray Leonard. And you know Angelo Dundee? He told me, say, I'm about the same size as Ali. He wanted me to get in the ring, man. I said, nah, I'm not the one, man. I'm not going to get busted in the mouth, busted in the head. You get paid, and I'm walking around punch drunk, okay? So stuff I be saying, bro. It is what it is, man. I like to make people think, man.
Okay.
I only debate my equals. Everybody else I teach.
Dr. John Henry Clark. Okay. All right, brother. Thanks, Wes. And I think for me, and I know we're saying about Kareem, and to a great degree, I do agree. But I guess I was just so upset that he didn't remember the program. He remembered his program, but he didn't remember who was in charge of the program that allowed him to be at that venue to pose those questions to MLK, and that was Dr. John Henry Clark. And that just kind of really, that bothered me, man. I'm just saying. You know, Dr. John Henry Clark, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the greatest African-centered scholars. There's others as well. I'm saying one of the greatest African-centered scholars who loved African people. That sense of scholarship was not accommodating. That sense of scholarship was not compromising. And see, Kareem went off in that area. You know? That's what Kareem did. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, Oshie.
Yeah.
First of all, I like to apologize to you. I would like to say, you know, I call people out, but I call people out for legitimate reasons, and I just take issues when people call people out based on no real facts, and it's unfortunate. So, you know, I apologize to you, and I respect for you and your program. I remember when I took a class at Hunter College with Dr. Clark back in the 80s. And, you know, it was so funny because I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't really know nothing. I just went into the class because a friend of mine dragged me along. Matter of fact, it was a girl that I knew that dragged me along. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, she throws it up in my face all the time.
I bet she does.
Even now, 40 years later. But the thing was this, and this was eye-opening, and I didn't understand it. So you got to understand, when you come from certain situations and you get exposed to greatness, you don't understand what they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Dr. Clark would give a presentation. And, you know, I didn't know this, because I really wasn't aware yet. There would always be some white student that would want to question him. And, you know, Dr. Clark had a nastiness about him, but it was real smooth.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of those things to whereas he would become belligerent or anything like that, but he would spank you, and he would spank you. And I didn't know, to be honest with you, what it was to really see a black man spank a white man, because I just, to be honest with you, hadn't been exposed to it.
Exactly.
But let me tell you something. Oh, Dr. Clark would bust him up. With the history.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, he would use one thing that stuck in my mind. He said, in order to understand your history, you must first have to read and understand the white man's history. Mm-hmm. And once you understand the white man's history and you read your history, then you know all the truth because you could compare both. Mm-hmm. And man, it took me years to understand that. But that's the most truest statement one could make.
Right.
You got to know the Yorugu's history. You got to.
That's why I consistently promote Dr. Marimba Ani's book, Yorugu. And the subtitle is A African-Centered Critique of European Cultural Thought and Behavior. What she has done in that great work is that she used their information about them. She analyzed them, their patterns of behavior, their thoughts, their modalities, their ethos. She used them. And as I said, there's one section of her book that I've read a number of times, and that is the religious part, because it is through that religion that they have imposed on the world, and particularly on us, that prevents us from really understanding who we are and embracing who we are. It is the main impetus or impediment for African unity. The main. You know, and I know these last 10 days, many of our young people and others who have talked about and kind of sense that because these things are done globally, and the reason why globally it can happen is because you have in your hand, on your table, before you, a computer, and those things are linked globally, the World Wide Web, and so people can see them. And so now you've seen the demonstrations globally. You see pictures of even Germany having a march. Damn, and you know it's bad when the Germans say how you treat black people is bad, you know. But the world, but if you think there's going to be some fundamental change in how America operates, that there's going to be some real change, some structural change, legislative change, economic change, if you think that that's going to happen, well, let me say
hey,
this.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, you hear me? I just sent you the article that Kareem got leukemia, okay?
He's got leukemia?
I just sent you the article, bro.
Okay, he's got leukemia. He's got a cancer. Okay, he has a form of cancer.
All right.
Okay.
All right. You know what I'm talking about, man? Hey, I don't just be jumping my damn gun.
Well, let me just say this. I don't think he got it from messing with white women. You get cancer for a number of reasons. But I tell you what, Wes, we'll go with that.
I'll take that after that, man.
All right, brother. Okay, thanks, Wes.
Hey, Oshie.
Yeah.
Hey, Oshie, let's think about this right quick. Even if he does have leukemia or cancer, let's be clear. What do that have to do with his intellect? What do that have to do with his character? What do that have to do with what he presents to the world?
Nothing.
Nothing. That right there is where it goes into, it's off cuff, it's no reality, it's no purpose, it's no, as one would say, wisdom involved with it. Cancer has nothing to do with the greatness of who that man is.
No, and let me just say this. Hold up, all of y'all. Hold up. Let me just say this. It doesn't have anything to do. Unfortunately, he has leukemia. I remember great athletes. We can remember the brother who played at Syracuse, Ernie Davis. Got leukemia. Ernie Davis was going to be as great as Jim Brown. Many people believed that. And then when the Browns drafted him, he was going to be the next Jim Brown. And unfortunately, he died of leukemia. When Stokes got ill playing basketball, Cincinnati Royals, and Jack Twyman, Carl, and then Jack Twyman, became friends, and he helped him in the latter parts of his life as he made his transition, you know. So it happens. Let me say this. It's going to happen in this environment, because this environment and the European imposition on the world environment, people get cancer. People get all other kinds of diseases. Early on, when Europeans began to venture out and take people's stuff, what they also brought with them were diseases. Look what happened to this country. So that's just the reality. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has an intellect. I'm not going to argue that. The only problem I have with Kareem, and believe me, I wish I didn't have it because he would be one of my favorites of all time. I used to call him the king. I called him the king. I called him the king back when he played with the Bucks. I watched it, of course, at UCLA, hoping they'd lose because I hated dynasties, I guess, you know. But no, they didn't lose. You know, he couldn't play as a freshman. But his freshman team beat the varsity. That's how good he was. And because of him, they beat the varsity team. Look it up. And then he won three straight, probably the biggest game of all times at that time in college basketball, was Houston, UCLA, in the Astrodome. Tens of thousands of people and around the world, Saturday night. Never forget it, on a Saturday night. And Houston beat them. Kareem had an eye patch. And Elvin Hayes was killing that night. They met in the semifinals, I believe it was, or something like that. I don't know. In the NC2A tournament, they got dusted. Houston got dusted. Kareem and all them cats, man, Mike Warren and them dudes, killed him. He won three straight championships. Drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks. Bucks won the coin flip. Phoenix. Phoenix lost. They took a cat named Don May, I believe. And the Bucks took Kareem. And in 71, they won the championship. Four straight over Wes Unseld and Earl the Pearl Monroe and Gus Honeycomb Johnson. My favorite teams, the Baltimore Bullets. Beat them four straight. The finals didn't even get into May. I mean, didn't even get into June. At that time, they were always in May anyway. Finals were. You know? And then in 74, oh, man, that I want them to beat Boston so bad. Man, I hate Boston. And then, of course, they ended. Kareem went to L.A. And then for a couple years, not good, but then Magic Johnson showed up. So I love Kareem in that sense. Like I love Magic, and I love Elgin. I mean, as a players, and Kobe as players. But outside of that, what they could do with the right kind of heart and mind and courage of a LeBron, that's why I like LeBron. I like LeBron from Jump Street. That's why I like LeBron. So anyway, got about 15 minutes left. We're talking about a number of things, and of course we got off. I jumped on Kareem thing because I wanted to throw that out there when I heard him on NPR. And the fact that he couldn't remember Dr. Clark's name bothered me. It really did. And it would make me look at Kareem because now that's what I'll think of. I'll still, you know, watch the replays. I mean, 1985. If you are a real Laker fan, 1985 finals against Boston is it. Because they finally beat the Boston Celtics. And they beat them on the parquet floor of Boston Gardens. And Kareem was the MVP of that series. He played phenomenally in that series. Because if you remember, they should have won in 84. Magic just, unfortunately, just wasn't Magic. They should have won in 84. And then, of course, they won in 85. 86, they got knocked out by a damn lucky shot by Ralph Sampson in Houston. And so in Houston, they played Boston. But in 87, the Lakers got them again. They got them again. So I will always, being a Laker fan, have that affection. But then again, let me say this, and hopefully you all are clear. Because of my mindset, I have no illusions about entertainers. If an entertainer, just like I said earlier, if you listened, I said I've noticed some players, and I can understand the level of awareness or even consciousness by the tattoos they have on him. That's just a possibility. Just because you do have an ankh on, this is like people with names. There are people with beautiful names, African names, Muslim names, Arabic names, made up names that somebody made up and even gave it a meaning, but who do heinous and evil things. So that's why I've never advocated a name change. I did it for me because I thought it was the right thing, because I believe in self-determination. Part of self-determination that says what? Name yourself. Name yourself. When I changed my name, the only person that I went to when I was going to do it was my mother, who named me Edward Brown. And I said to her, Mom, I'm going to change my name. And she said, go ahead, because she's going to do it anyway. Well, I mean, you know, I don't think you can really put up an argument for somebody to keep your name Edward. I'm sorry. I know I wouldn't put up an argument. You know, and if you want to change your name. And so my mother called me Oshie to the day she made her transition. I miss her. And, you know, but my stepfather, I don't think he ever called me Oshie, you know. But I love him anyway, you know. And there are some people that'll still call me Eddie. And if I sense that they're calling me that because of back in the day and they're not aware of today, but if I know that they are and they do it anyway, then I take issue with that. I don't make a big deal because I'm not a big pusher and advocate for name change. I promote mind change. Because once your mind is right, everything else will fall into place. And if you feel that's right for you to change your name, then you will do so. Some people have a name change that have never changed it legally. And so just like when I changed my name, what did the brother say? Oh, yeah. Well, what does your paycheck say? You know, you got to admit that what's on your paycheck is what the deal is. You know, I don't give a damn driver's license. I don't care about your, what's on your paycheck? Well, on my paycheck was Oshiemi Adelabu. On my birth certificate was Oshiemi Adelabu. I had to have all those things changed. The whole ordeal probably cost me, and I didn't go to a lawyer. I had a friend who was a paralegal. She helped me through the process. Probably cost about $200 at that time. This is the 80s because my name became official in 92. I just seen that document the other day. You know, but I got the name in the 80s from an African naming ceremony. Sister in the Yoruba community said, I have a name for you. I see what you do in the community, she said. In fact, my guest this past Wednesday, Ben Njai, the Black Panther, sent me a piece on my last name, Adelabu, what it means. And just as she said, is what he sent. Adelabu, crown across great waters. That means wherever you are a king. Oshiemi means leadership that fits him. And so I was very honored. And so when the sister, and here in Atlanta, Brother Manahochi moved from Milwaukee and moved here to Atlanta. And his wife, Nanahochi, she gave me my name. And then when I saw that she was making she had made her transition, I was at the firehouse. I called up the chief and told him I had to make a run. You know, I'm going to put somebody in to cover for me. I'm going to make this run and I'll be back. Cool. All right. Went and paid my respects because she gave me my name. I didn't know that she had passed. I saw it. There's been times that there are people in my life and, you know, that I didn't have a chance to really pay respects to people I thought that were very important, who I looked up to, who I looked at, you know, It's unfortunate. Sometimes I did. I mean, just like Muhammad Ali, I was going to be in Louisville, Kentucky, brother. I was going to be there. I hated how it happened. Not that he passed, because he was going to pass. He had been ill. But I'm talking about the structure of it, because it was, you know, Lonnie, his fourth wife. She had turned everything over to these European Jews, you know? And then, of course, having Clinton with the last of the eulogies, and you know how I feel about the Clintons. So that was a bother. But I had to be there. I had to be there, and I want to thank my sister, my friend Mary, for help facilitating that. So we only got a few more minutes, and I want to thank our brothers and sisters who call. You know, we talked about Conrad World. That's the main focus of the day, was Conrad. I threw the Kareem piece in because, you know, that was fresh. That was yesterday. And I just wanted to make mention of that. And to me, you look at the people in your life and in your history and your heroes, sheroes, the way you want to. The way I look at them, of course, as it relates to being African, being who we are, and speaking hard on that. I guess I'm just wishful that all of us had that mindset. I know we don't, because if we did, we wouldn't be in this position. And what you're seeing today with the disturbances, that's the point I was going to try to make earlier, with being all around the world, it's still kumbaya. They still highlight the hugs and the kneel downs of police officers with us. They still show, I mean, when there was riots, I mean, when there was demonstration, you did see some Caucasians. There's no doubt about that. When you look at some of the marches, and even the marches I participated in my recollection, you could see that. But if there was rioting or something like that, you didn't see no Caucasians. You didn't see, not like today, especially no Caucasians that was starting stuff that would get their ass whooped. For sure.
Hey, but Oshi, right quick, you got to explain the reason why these Caucasians out here marching, because their position is tenuous. That their position is weakening. Those that are out there are not your everyday working Joes like Karen, who called up on the black man.
No.
These are restaurant workers,
right.
Retail workers,
no,
and others.
Some of these individuals are there strategically to cause violence. It's part of movement, the anarchist movement, the Infada.
Nah, I disagree with you.
Well, you can.
Oh, do a little more research. A little more research on that. Anytime the president tried to make it out that they're part of it, you got to really question it.
And so let me just
some other hands that's at play. I think.
Okay, let me just go there too, because I understand that as well. What you have is extremes on both sides that are manipulated in this situation. You have the far right and those who argue that they want to create and start a race war, which is ludicrous, especially for us. We're not in that position. I don't think we're going to have the same allies, supposedly, that are in the marches that we have now that are causing some destruction. You have police officers who were disguised, who were breaking windows, leaving bricks so people could pick up bricks, you know? So I understand what you're saying, Jay. That stuff is out there.
Hey, look, have a good weekend, Ocean.
You
as
too.
Always, man. No one does it like you, brother. Hotel,
Jay. Thanks a lot, brother. Appreciate you calling me. Appreciate you listening all these times. You know it. Have a great weekend. And all of you guys, have a great weekend. And hopefully that the weekend will be nice. You can do something positive. I know that a lot of places are now open, but once again, there's going to be a wave, brothers and sisters, based upon these disturbances. You've seen people, there was no social distancing. When you see people, there was people yelling shouting. It's just like when they showed that church situation. They said the choir was singing and they were spewing those microscopic droplets out into the atmosphere. Maybe it was being carried by the air conditioner or some fans. And the people in the pews did not have masks on. And they breathed it in. And those people got COVID-19. And a few, I put emphasis on that word, a few of them died. And so you're going to see a spike across the country because of that, particularly in major cities and possibly even around the world. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend. Be safe. Be safe. If you don't have to go, don't go. But if you do have to go, mask up, glove up, be safe. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodie family, we will. Not that we might, or we shall, or we could. No, we will be victorious. Have a blessed day. Peace, family.